from the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois. This is the Closing Market Report for the second day of February 2022. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities. Ben Brown from Missouri University Extension will join us to discuss his view of trade, and we'll talk about the agricultural energies with Dan O'Brien from K-State Extension right here on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
March corn today settled at 274 and three quarters. That was up 20 and a half cents. The May contract at 272 and a half, up 19 and three quarters. December 8 higher at 605 and three quarters. Nearby beans up 33 and a half at 1635 for the March. November at 1473 and a quarter, up 9 and a half cents. I didn't see that in the earlier trade the day. Things were higher. Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities, but not that high. What happened?
I think that the wheat led the way towards the end of the day. It hadn't been going very far, and the wheat really popped up, you know, 44 cents here, and that was nowhere near that earlier in the day. And I think that that has a lot to do with the wheat belt. There's a lot of wheat that comes out of the Ukraine and Russia that way, and if something does seem to happen, that's what really pulled it up.
You know, I don't know whether there's much to talk about as it relates to the futures market, simply because we just can't tell at this point. However, this is the last few days of the month of February, and the volatility index for the price of crop insurance is now being calculated. And if it's high enough, things will get a lot higher for the price of premiums, I guess.
Unfortunately, that's right. We like the volatility taking the price up for the price that we can insure for, but we sure don't like the volatility factor that's going to put the price of the insurance to the farmer on up that way. We're going to see some resistance probably when we give them the numbers, though, what it's really going to calculate for this year. But boy, it's going to be something decent. But we need something decent with the price of the inputs they're going to have this year. Seed and the fertilizer and chemicals and the availability of chemicals. Wow. We're not sure what we've got.
Yeah, it sure looks like things are really going to be tough for spring as it relates to pesticides. Anything else that we need to talk about as it relates to the marketplace today?
You know, I think the ports are still open over there. We're still looking. The crude is very strong. We're seeing that pull things up. The S&Ps, though, were 3 months. They visited 3 months lows here today. So we are seeing a little bit of negative reaction in the stock market as we go here. But I think with all the things we're talking about, Todd, this is a great time to remind all of our listeners about the March 8th meeting at the Peef House, because we're going to have lots of guys from FarmDoc there to tell us lots of good things about what you and I maybe aren't sure about today.
Yeah, so I was going to get to that, but it is a great time to get people out to the Peef House. If you've not bought your tickets yet, you can do that at willag.org, willag.org. And when you're there, you'll see the rundown. In fact, I move things around because Scott Irwin can't make it in the morning. So that's good news in particular. We move things back a half hour on the start time. We didn't change the end time because I had a Q&A session there at the end with the Farm Doc folks. So we start later if you're in the central time zone, 8:30 now, 9:30 if you're in the eastern time zone. Of course, a little earlier than that because doors open an hour before that, so folks can get over there for the all-day ag outlook. And you will be there, the rest of the Will Ag panelists, about 10 of them, including Eric Snodgrass, will kick us off with the weather. It should be a great day to get over there.
Top weather guy in the country right now. He is most demand of any of the weathermen out there at all the great big seminars. Generally for a seminar with him now, you're going to be paying $100, $200 to go to it. So what a deal.
It is a deal. Eric's really good to us, and I thank him a great deal for being there. Thank you for being there. This will be your 31st, and you have been on every panel at every one of these events. And I'm going to say, and I don't know this for sure, because this event started in 91 as the All Day Ag Outlook, now the Spring Outlook, but there was one in the evening the year before in 1990. I bet you were on that one, too.
I think so.
Indeed. Thank you so much for all the work.
Thank you, Todd.
That's Wayne Nelson. He's with L&M Commodities in New Market, Indiana, and will be a panelist at the Spring Outlook. You can join us by calling 217-333-7300 or going to willag.org. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason, Ben Brown from University of Missouri Extension and FAPRI, the Food Agricultural Policy Research Institute, there in Columbia, now joins us to take up the marketplace today. Thanks, Ben, for being here. I would like you, as an ag economist that looks at these things, to go through some domestic demand. Can we start with NOPA report, the National Oilseed Processors, from last week, please?
Yep, sure can, and happy Tuesday to you. I know we're usually doing these on a Monday, but with the holiday, we're on Tuesday. So we did get, a week ago, we got the National Oilseed Processors Association report came out. And again, that represents about 95% of, or their members represent about 95% of total soybean crush here in the United States. After coming off the all-time single-month record in December of 186.4 million bushels for NOPA members, which translates to, again, to about 198 million bushels of total soybean crush in the United States. We followed that up with what turned into be a very bearish January soybean crush report. Trade estimates going into the day was beating the December record, setting a new all-time high. And what we ended up getting was a very weak soybean crush report, at least in relation to those expectations. NOPA members reported they crushed 182.2 million bushels in January. Not only was that 4.5 million bushels below the average trade guess, that was also 1.5 million bushels below the most pessimistic estimate for the day. So a pretty bearish report there. The market largely shook it off, and we'll get and talk a little bit about some of the news coming out of South America, I believe, as well. But with that lower crush volume, soybean oil stocks fell below trade estimates for the day. That helped give a little support to the soybean oil market because they were that oil market was fearful of an overly strong report. The more soybeans you crush, the more soybean oil you produce. And so we crushed less, we had less oil, and that provided some support to that soybean oil market. But in summary, last Tuesday's soybean crush report from NOPA was disappointing for those looking for any fundamental reasons for soybean prices at their current levels. However, as I mentioned, the developing shortfall in South America's soybean crop continues to push prices higher. Of course, we've got some other things feeding into markets as well, but certainly the South American crop continues to push that. Domestic crush facilities are going to have to work hard this summer through the remaining part of the marketing year to hit USDA's new target. We face troubles, and I say we, that soybean crush industry faced some troubles finding and sourcing product and supplies during the summer months last year. That was largely due to the limitations or the lower yields that we experienced in the upper plains and the western part of the Corn Belt. This year, we might have export markets taking a lot of those beans instead of keeping them here. So they're going to have to fight against those international buyers for product.
Well, I would like to turn your attention to the export market a bit, but relationship to South America. I would have thought that this late in the season for the South American soybean crop, not their second crop corn, which is just beginning its season, but the soybean crop, that most of that lift would have been built into the marketplace. You think there's was still some support last week from South America?
So we continue to see dryness in South America, and especially now that the combines are rolling in southern Brazil, where the damage was the worst. And I think we're getting actual evidence that the crop is short, is what I would say. So the expectation that it would be short has been there. We're now getting validated evidence that crop is short. And so I think that's just providing some reassurance to the market. I've got two points I'd like to make. A shortfall of production in South America and a reduction in soybean exports from South America does not necessarily transition into a one-for-one substitution of U.S. export demand. Higher prices will limit some international buyers' appetite for product. And then the second thing that comes into play here is timing is everything. Brazilian soybeans in certain months and certain regions are still cheaper in the summer months than U.S. soybeans. And so we continue to see buyers buying South American soybeans. They're maybe providing some insurance against, not being able to take shipment on those products or getting those products by buying U.S. soybeans. But the majority of the sales from the United States recently have been new crop soybeans. So after the turn of the marketing year in September, when we have soybeans from our harvest. And so I think that is noteworthy that we're seeing buying pressure of people expecting there to be demand for soybeans both U.S. and in South America, or for buyers from those regions to pick up some additional. And so I think that's where we're seeing the buying pressure and the pressure on prices as out of those regions, or out of those contexts.
What's your take on the Ukraine-Russia issue as it relates to the export market for corn and wheat?
Yeah, good question. I'm not going to pretend that I understand or can predict what's going to happen with Ukraine and Russia. It's been dominating the news cycle the last couple of days. Everybody's talking about it. Certainly we've seen the ebbs and flows of this. We've heard of diplomatic progress. But then yesterday, Russia declared two regions of Ukraine as independent and ordered troops into those regions. How the U.S. and other countries respond with sanctions is going to be important. We've seen Germany sanction or make attempts to limit gas imports through a pipeline into Germany and Eastern Europe. That certainly has negative implications for Russia. We've seen the United Kingdom target their financial sector. For the U.S., deciding what restrictions to impose on Russia is tricky. Hitting the sector that would do them the most damage, or at least to Russia's economy, would be hitting their oil and gas industry. But that would cause big problems for U.S. and Europe as companies and people, in this case, voters, are already dealing with the highest energy prices in years. So, it has the way the U.S. goes about this is very tricky, and it's going to be a tricky balancing act. But it does, the implications have different meaning for different commodities in question. You've pointed out a couple. So for things like oil, corn, and wheat, where Ukraine and Russia are big exporters of those, relative to the world, this is a bullish signal for U.S. producers of those crops. If you're looking to buy grain to feed cattle, that's maybe not your ideal situation because it could make corn and wheat pricier. But on the flip side of that, products that Russia and Ukraine import, like meat and dairy, would have bearish implications because we might not be sending as much product. So it does have different signals, and we've certainly seen that in the market the last couple of days, especially in the wheat complex. Wheat has responded very favorably since the market opened after the holiday. And that's all expectations that this is going to continue to develop, and the global world is going to need to source wheat and corn from other places like the United States rather than depending on that Black Sea region.
Hey, thank you.
Appreciate it, Todd. Thank you.
Well, Ben Brown is with University of Missouri Extension and part of FAPRI, the Food and Agricultural Policy Research Institute. We're also joined today by Dan O'Brien, another agricultural economist. He's with Kansas State University Extension. Thank you for taking the time with us, Dan. We always talk with Dan on Tuesday once a month. Usually we talk with Ben once a month, but that normally comes on Monday, but the markets were closed. Dan, thanks for being with us. You and I usually talk about agricultural energies. What are the big things you've been watching this week? And I'm sure Ukraine and Russia and the issues related to oil there are among them.
Well, they are. And we know where we've been, but to know where we're going is the question. As we've seen oil prices shooting up towards 100, if they haven't passed that already, and you see diesel prices over $4 in terms of the U.S. Average prices, gasoline prices trending up to $3.58 also. So you've got pretty strong prices going on. We've been looking at kind of a tale of two blending parts when you look at ethanol prices on the one hand, which have been weakening mainly due to growth in stocks, that compared to RBOB prices, RBOB gasoline prices, which are reflecting all these other factors that are affecting the ethanol markets, or affecting the energy markets. So quite the set of factors. We have looked at the profitability estimates that we can get out of strong Midwestern ethanol plants, and it looks like the cost estimate so far in February is probably about $2.22 per gallon of ethanol produced for ethanol, but then with the weakening here of late in the ethanol prices, we have a price average of about $1.98. So what you put those together and you've got about a 23-24 cent loss. And that follows strong profits that we'd seen in in previous months. Again, 35, 60, 65. So it's kind of the classic over-response on the part of so many of our industries in agriculture, and that, again, we had periods of strong profits, we produced, and we ended up outran, then the supplies you have available ended up and outran the demand. So there you go. We also have looked at conventional biodiesel profitability, and that's been struggling for a while. And again, I'm looking at conventional diesel. This isn't the same as renewable diesel, so that's a different set of numbers to work with. But on the conventional side, the strong run-up in soybean oil prices, which we use to represent the main input, has basically averaging for the first 18 days in February about 72, 73 cents a pound. Biodiesel prices are at about 557 to 558 a gallon. So even with that, the strong soybean oil prices outpace the revenue side of it. So a February cost of about 625 a gallon to produce conventional biodiesel, that sales price of about 558 rounded, you end up with a loss of about 68 cents. So it is as it is. However, like I say, this story probably isn't so much on the conventional biodiesel side. It's on the renewable side that if nothing else is giving a lot of incentive for companies to build to actually have construction in agriculture and to put themselves in a position to reduce that. So our we're talking about conventional biodiesel, but the future of this seems to be on the renewable side.
Yeah, so we've discussed renewable diesel quite a bit, and those plants are in the planning process, usually connected to a refinery of some sort. However, I would like to come back to ethanol, because high prices cure high prices. That's the case with profits for ethanol, because production early on in the last quarter or so, I suppose, was really big, and now they have a lot of supply. However, how does the high price of oil influence what you see happening with ethanol at this point?
The price trend we've seen just in gasoline prices, much less diesel, you know, we had been below $2 at the very start of 2020, and now we're up to $3.58. And I guess so much of what we see is affected by our local neighborhood. Even out here in western Kansas, we've seen about a 20 to 30 cent increase in the price of gasoline just within the last 1 or 2 weeks. So again, you're dealing with inventories and which company has different inventories at which cost, et cetera. So what happens in the oil market affects the U.S. gasoline market, affects all these suppliers, wholesalers, processors all the way through, and ends up impacting RBOB gasoline. So RBOB gasoline prices, by the latest set of numbers that I'm looking at, jumped up to about, of late, they're just under $3 a gallon, and it wasn't, but about 8 to 10 weeks ago, they were at $2 a gallon. So, yeah, that in our world, and as we're talking about bioenergy, that's inflation. So we'll see where all this goes. You know, there are discussions. You and I talked off air about proposals to go to E15. Again, this has been done before. Probably other things being considered by the U.S. administration and Congress and regulators and all manner of players in that to try to mitigate what would be high energy prices. The risk is in, again, as we come into the summer driving season, we have sky high gasoline prices. Then you're wondering about impacts on the overall U.S. economy, on traveling, and you know, does that lead you closer to recessionary type activities? You need to be careful in talking about things like that, of course, but that's the fear that of what high energy prices could do. And if that occurs, then both ethanol and regular gasoline prices are all impacted.
Hey, thanks much, Dan.
Yes, thanks, Todd. I appreciate it.
Dan O'Brien is with Kansas State University Extension. Joined us here on the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media's Public Radio for the Farming World. Don't forget to buy those tickets for the Spring Outlook. That's coming up just in 2 weeks from today. You can buy the tickets online at willag.org for $25 or call this number, 217-333-7300. That's 217-333-7300. On this Tuesday afternoon, let's check in with Don Day. He's at Day Weather in Cheyenne, Wyoming. Don, though you're traveling today in a little warmer climb, I take it.
Yes, I'm in South Florida, where it's balmy, windy, and warmer than most of the rest of the nation right now. So I apologize to all the listeners who are freezing right now.
Oh, don't worry. I'm sure you'll end up back in Wyoming or someplace else. It's way colder, not very soon, and you'll skip over, maybe or maybe not, a couple of systems that are coming through the United States. It's kind of nice here today. The last time I looked, and we're recording a bit earlier, it was 58 earlier this morning. So it's been warm, but I take it we're due for a change in the weather again.
Yeah, one thing is this time of year, if there's a big warm-up, there's usually a big cool down coming in behind it. And folks across the Midwest and Corn Belt are going to find that out real quick. Arctic air is pushed across Nebraska. It is moving into western Iowa today and by tomorrow morning and into, the rest of the week. Temperatures across the Midwest, Corn Belt, Great Lakes are going to get much, much colder. You know, the worst of the cold will be up over the Dakotas, where it's just been brutal in the northern plains with bitter cold temperatures and wind chills. And we're going to see, once again, a pretty big push of this cold air go all the way down into the Gulf Coast. We're going to see freezing temperatures again down into Texas, and that's going to spread south and east across the region. So despite the spring-like feel that's happening in some parts of the Midwest, it's winter again here as we head to the rest of the week.
Now, depending on where you are in the United States, cold weather is expected, and you're prepared for it most of the time. Texas, not always, clearly. However, usually it's the precipitation that can cause a problem, snow, ice, those sorts of things. Do either of the systems coming through have a big precipitation load with them?
Not a big precipitation load, but there's going to be some ice and snow, again, moving across parts of the Midwest. And there's also going to be in the southeastern part of the United States, as the cold front comes in, a good opportunity for some severe weather breaking out as this front advances south and east. So weather is going to be in the news here over the next several days, first with severe cold in the north and the west and some ice and snow. And then there's going to be ice, snow, rain, and severe weather across the middle part of the United States as it moves on through. One benefit of this weather pattern change is we are going to see a little bit of precipitation in parts of the southern plains, maybe even a little bit of moisture, you know, with this front for Oklahoma, parts of Kansas, eastern Colorado, some of those wheat areas.
So I guess it's time for changes, isn't it?
It is. And, you know, what we see, Todd, is we go into March with a pattern where, at least in early March, there could be another shot of cold air into the northern and western areas of the United States, which would then translate to frontal systems across the mid part of the nation. So I would say March is a month we need to be ready for a lot of activity, maybe more in the last March or two we've seen.
Hey, thanks so much, Don.
Thanks, Todd.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather from Cheyenne, Wyoming. Joined us on this Tuesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media.